Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, today I'm solo podcasting. It's been a while. I find the solo podcast to be, I'm inviting them to feel easier. I think that I've just been putting too much pressure on myself until now. I've decided to take a little respite from talking about the language of betterarchy, as much as I love it, and as valuable of a tool it is one thing, and I hear myself interrupting myself. I'll get to the point in a moment. It's going to be that kind of day. It's very vata. It's very windy. Everything just feels very discombobulated, edgy, crunchy. I am recording this on the 31st, so, you know, who knows what will transpire in the world situation between now and this hitting your ears. And regarding my book, The Language of Betterarchy, I watch a lot of media. I watch more media than I would honestly prefer to watch. And I mean, I have so much ambivalence about it. Like, it's my job, it's what I'm trained in. But even when I was doing hardcore, you know, like, real news journalism,
Like checking the AP all day, every day, and like tracking everything, I would take really, really big long breaks, years at a time, because it was so hard on my heart. It was so heavy to A, like understand what's really going on. And I certainly don't think it's hopeless, but and it does take us getting very real with what's going on to implement the right solutions. Which brings me to my point is that I take in all this media and what so many people are talking about these problems. I'm like, but here's the solution, but the solution's right here, but I have the solution. It's already been created. All we need to do is put our attention on it and implement it. And, it's my lesson in patience, my lesson in non-attachment, the Bhagavad Gita, not having attachment to the fruits of my labor, just do the labor because it's my dharma to do the labor. And I'm so grateful. The reason I just checked that notification is part of what we're going to talk about today. So let's just bookmark that. This forced two-factor authentication they're trying to foist upon me. And I'm really grateful that I came across the Bhagavad Gita in my formative, early 20s while my brain was still developing. And I feel like it just fortifies me this lifetime. And I was talking to someone about it today, and she's like, well, you're an Aquarius, you're in the future. It takes people a while to catch up to things. And I know this. And I also know that that's a story and that time is a construct and isn't linear, but we're trying to have a conversation. So I need to pick a dimension. So let's just have it in 3D. And I'm going to take a sip. Mastering my pauses and self-regulating. It is what it is. All in divine timing. I'm doing what I came here to do and learning to be less and less attached to how it is or isn't received or the timing upon which it's received. And at the same time, writing the story that it is being received quickly and easily and massively, and having such a profound transformative impact on our understanding of our unity and our empowerment. The two drums I beat over, 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 over. Anyway, the topic today is the weaponization of customer service. And I have talked about this before. And because this is a longer show, the solo pods, I want to take some time to bring to like help it sink in. I am excited for more people to start picking up the conversation about the weaponization of customer service, which is why I'm devoting an entire solo podcast so we can really get into it and all of the tendrils. I see the weaponization of customer service as an inflection point around which we can unify as Americans and shut it down. I feel like it's a weakness in this giant attempted takedown of our country, which is obviously failing miserably and laughably, and still I'm so excited to like hurry it up. So it affects all of us. I feel like right now it's all about hurting everyone's attention, outrage, unresolved emotions, right, towards thing X, be it, pandemic, be it Roe versus Wade, be it Ukraine, be it Black Lives Matter, be it, pick your op. And there, we got the big one happening right now, oceans away, where everyone's outsourcing their rage towards an offshore genocide, completely oblivious to the fact that we're living through a genocide here that so many people are just like willingly availing themselves to, lobbying for, championing, celebrating. This is one of those days where I'm just allowing myself the full expression of how dysregulating this entire situation is. And I'm not victimizing myself to it, right? It's all grist for growth. It's right, okay, how do we up level? How do I surf with this? How do we dance with this? What do I learn from this, right? And it's a process. And again, like with being real about the world situation, it's intense right now. I mean, it's intense for me. It's all I can say. It's my, I say it very frequently. This is my first apocalypse and I'm figuring out as I go. And yeah, I feel like the psycho-emotional aspect of living in a completely different perceived reality construct than half of the people on the planet who all of a sudden have this like aggressive, bigoted, expressed hatred for those who aren't under that same confusion is, it's intense. And then plus on top of it, we have the systemic, I just came back from the hot springs. So as you're watching and seeing me scratch my head like a monkey, that is what is happening. And I'm choosing to focus. So, you know, not to mention what's happening systemically with the squeeze, right? The AI encroachment squeeze, the automation, the death of customer service, or surely the weaponization of it. Although I think at this point, it's a both. It's a both. So, you know, I've spoken about this on my show with Emily. I'm sure I've brought it up in a couple shorter rants. And it is, you know, we talk about this slow boil of social engineering, and this is such a huge part of it. And while it's not my intention to kvetch for the sake of kvetching, it is my intention to draw our attention. It is my intention to draw our attention to it so that we can all get off our knees and push back. And that is really going to be an ongoing through line in today's show, is it is really time to get off our knees. There is no more excuse for it anymore. It has gone quite far enough. And right now, what capital L life, what team love and, you know, love for a thriving humanity is inviting is your participation, is your voice, is your also offering reflections to those who are confused, kindly and compassionately, to help unify our attention and our intentions in, at the very least, right, low level, bringing back customer service. I really feel like this is something we can all get on board with, because it's not just affecting those who identify as Republicans or those who identify as queer or what, whatever that thing is. This is completely equalizing and unifying and anti-life, and it sucks. So pause for a sip. I just noticed I have a green theme. Okay, so it's happening on so many levels, and I have created a list, and this is by no means a complete list, and this is a two-page list for those who are watching with your eyeballs, of my own personal experiences of it. And I'm sharing these personal experiences with the hopes that it will trigger a remembrance in you of a similar experience or a recognition of what is going on. Because I feel like when we, you know, start to understand it as an expression of this one overarching social engineering psyop called the weaponization slash death of customer service, then we can recognize it. And then when we recognize it, we can use our voices to kindly let those in charge know that we're not down with it and that we're taking our business elsewhere. And this is, I get it. This is a stretch. This is inconvenient, right? To put our money where our mouths are, or to not put our money where our mouths are, to vocally pull our money where our mouths are, to shift this. Guys, it's going to be much easier for us to come together and flip the weaponization of customer service than it's going to be, you know, like a cashless society. So let's all come together so that it doesn't get that far. Let's shut it down now, right? I've said this so many times, and it's like no one wants to play this game. It's time for us to play this game. Everyone who has eyes to see right now, it is time for us to stop going along to get along. You don't have to be a dick about it. It can be super kind. You know, you go into a store and the cashier says, we don't take cash. And you say, that's illegal according to the New Mexico Constitution, where cash is protected as legal tender. So you can take the cash and I'll take this item, or I'll just take the item and you don't, you cannot take the cash, but this is a law that you're breaking, right? Kindly educate them. They need to be educated. You know, I had this happen in Albuquerque. So this is one instance of, there's like a vegetarian restaurant run by a Sikh man in Albuquerque. And it's a great place. You know, they have really yummy, clean, grab and go food, but they have this, we don't take cash thing. And I love going there. I'm always kind about it. And the cashier said, we don't take cash. And I said, that's illegal, blah, blah, blah. And he was sitting right there, the owner, and he said, oh yes, I know. And I'm like, et tu? Like, there's one thing when it's just straight up ignorance, like, oh, I didn't know that that was the law. But then there's the knowing, and like, I'm still gonna take a big steaming poop on my fellow citizens' freedom and anonymity and like all of the things that the beauty of a free currency provides us for what, my convenience? It doesn't even matter. It's just like, we're at the edge and it's time for us to use our voices. So I really, you know, I've said this before, when it comes to the cash, look up your state's constitution. And if they list cash as legal tender, as protected in your state constitution, then that is illegal. And that is something to push back upon, because great, you wanted to cover your face. Great, you wanted to inject yourself with whatever. Great, you want to put a black square up as your profile picture. Great, you want to fly a blue and yellow flag in front of your hotel. Great, you want to go to a protest about something that your television or your computer is telling you is happening several thousand miles and oceans away. Great. But when it comes to cash, no. No, no. Cash and free speech, for me, those are the like, no, I don't have tolerance for your different opinion on this, because you can take that to a country that isn't free. You can take that to a socialist country. You could take that, you could take your attitude and your ideas and your confusion to a socialist country, but you can't enforce that shit here. This is a constitutional republic and we don't play like that. So it's really the time to stand up. So, okay, why is there no more squeegee at the gas stations? Like, that was a COVID thing, right? So during COVID, I guess it was because there were, I'm guessing, but the idea that there were cooties on the handle. And so we can't have those kind of cooties, even though we're touching the exact same handle on the gas pump. Okay. 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 But now the COVID thing is over, and I don't know where it is where you live, but the bulk of the gas stations here, they'll have the squeegee in there, but no water or no squeegee. It's very odd. It's like this low level of service. Like, remember when they used to check your tires? I mean, I'm not lobbying for the days where they would pump our gas for us, unless you're in Oregon, where I think that is still happening. I think that's required there. But the courtesy of a squeegee and a water, they haven't brought that back, right? Very similar to that, our thrift stores, the chains, so that's Savers and Goodwill, their dressing rooms are still completely locked up. Now, they had gotten rid of dressing rooms during COVID, which also, I don't understand. Let me stretch myself and see if I could figure it out. Maybe like if I took off my pants to try on another pair of pants, the cooties on my legs would infect those pants and then kill the person. Let's say I didn't get those pants, right? So then kill the next person who tried those pants on or bought those pants. I'm guessing, But then it's not the same when I'm like touching the clothes on the racks. I don't get it. I'm obviously not smart enough. I'm not an evolutionary biologist. So, but those haven't been brought back. And this is affecting all of us. Again, not like left, right, center, anarchist, not even part of this paradigm, scorched earth. Like, we're all affected by no longer being able to try on the clothes that we're purchasing. And then they say, they kind of pass it off with like, oh, well, you could bring it back in a week with the tags and your receipt. And it's like, oh, great, I have to come back here. So it's another hook to get me back in to buy more stuff, or just to inconvenience. I mean, I'm sure that the like profit margin is now secondary to just inconveniencing and enraging the customers and letting the customers know how much the store owners, the corporations loathe their guts. That's how it seems to me. And so this is the normalization phase that Yuri Bezmenov talks about, right? Like, they instituted these policies, no squeegee, no dressing rooms during COVID. Now COVID's over, but they continue them. This is normalization 101. And let's remember that normalization is the fourth and final stage to ideological subversion. First stage, demoralization. Demoralize a country. Lower their moral standard. Booze, weed, sex, money, gender confusion. I hate this country. I hate capitalism. Feel ashamed of your race. Feel ashamed of your gender. Feel ashamed of your Y chromosome, right? Demoralize, demoralize, demoralize. Next stage, destabilization. Housing crisis. Debt, right? Increasing debt. Raising the prices of everything, getting us used to Amazon, convenience, all of these things. Stage three, crisis, right? 9/11, that gave us the Patriot Act. COVID, look what's happening now. Stage four, normalization. What's after normalization? Full communist enslavement, right? There's no step five, which is why normalization cannot happen, which is why it is incumbent upon you and me and all of us to safeguard our freedom right now and to keep speaking out against any attempts at normalization. Every time, there is no pass. There is no moment where it's like, I'm uncomfortable. This is inconvenient. Mm-mm. We've lost that privilege, guys. It's gone on too long. Now is the time. And again, it's really helpful. Use our mouth and then take our business elsewhere. Now, I also want to be fully transparent. When I say that, I get triggered. I'm like, I don't want to be inconvenienced. I don't want to not shop where I want to shop or have the things that I want to have, or, you know, like, I get all of those things. I am currently running those things through my head as I'm saying this. And at the same time, this is the, you know, a lot of times I'll talk about the little no's for the bigger yes, right? These are the little no's for the bigger yes. The bigger yes is called our freedom. It's called a free country for ourselves, for our families, for our loved ones, to hold that for the larger world situation, right? Yes, I'm being idealistic. That's fine. That idealism is a very, very, very powerful energetic, right? There are ideals upon which this country was founded. Where it falls short, where it's full of shit, where it's sold out, those are different conversations. Remember, today's one 3D conversation. And in this conversation, we can connect to the ideals upon which this nation was founded. And we can safeguard those with our integrity and our voices and our spending, our business. Why are we giving our business to companies that hate us, treat us like dirt, and are going the distance to bring in a transhumanist communist enslavement regime? The reason why my channel isn't monetized on YouTube, not that I even post on YouTube anymore, except for short trailers, but even when I was posting on YouTube and had hit all of their markers to be able to monetize, what made it a no-go for me was their two-factor authentication. Is it authentication? Yeah, I'm like, is it authentication? Their two-factor authentication requirement for that. And that's a no-go for me. Like, it's odd to me when I see people who understand how nefarious this AI automation techno-fascist agenda is, who avail themselves of like notifications on their phone or two-factor authentication, or who will like tap a card. I don't know if tapping a card is different. No, it's not the card. Who will like use their phone to pay for things and bring their phone everywhere. And I get it. Like, we all get to apocalypse in our own way. There is no wrong way to do this. I mean, I guess, unless, well, is it, it's my judgment to say it's the wrong way to enslave yourself to this anti-life genocidal agenda, but who am I to judge? Anyway, it's odd to me when I see people who understand the agenda who are still availing themselves to like deeper and deeper down the tech automation convenience AI enslavement rabbit hole. That's my own thing. I mean, I'm averse to that. And I'm not down with two-factor authentication. It requires that I'm enslaved to a device. I don't take my device with me in public. I am not on my device when I'm with people because I wasn't raised in a cave. You already use it way more than I want to be using it, but it is my plan to ultimately get off of it, right? As these, if the fucktards get away with what they're trying to get away with, which on my watch, I don't really see that happening, but you know, I'm continually astounded by humanity's love of their enslavement. It is never ceases to amaze. But if that goes further, like already I'm kind of almost done with this freaking iPhone, right? And this is what happened in terms of I'm talking to you. I'm having a focused conversation. The only reason my phone is here is because I'm timing myself to keep it to my tight 55 minutes for Progressive Radio Network, which if you're not tuning in to me there, just know that there's another option in case you're not in a Wi-Fi situation and you're listening on the radio. How cool is that? And I want less phone enslavement, not more. We've already talked about, well, I know I talked about it on one of my post-show throwdowns. I don't know that I've gone deeply into it in the public, but planned obsolescence being completely anti-life and something that not only are we wise to push back upon, but like, why is it even legal? If we have this climate thing happening, then why would we be allowing, fostering a paradigm of completely excess waste for no reason other than unchecked greed by filling landfills with outdated phones and accessories and laptops and iPads and televisions and monitors and because this gross anti-life planned obsolescence paradigm is allowed to just run unchecked. But we're supposed to like not use a gas stove anymore. Well, the whole Apple paradigm gets to like run rampant. But even beyond their fake like climate fraud narrative, we absolutely have a pollution problem here. We have absolutely been disrespecting Mother Earth in egregious ways. So why would we be engaging a system that has more, not just more pollution, but mining? Like, why do you think we're starting all these wars in Africa? Proxy wars, regime change wars, right? Which get no attention, which get no press, right? I don't see people freaking out over that genocide or those genocides plural because they're not the cool, hip, trendy genocides. But look at the mining involved in creating these iPhones. Wouldn't it be smarter to just make one really good, really well-made iPhone that lasts at least a decade, if not 20 years, where you don't need to keep buying new headphones and chargers to fit the ever-changing ports? All those are going in landfills. And to not be forced into these OS updates at warp speed to completely keep our nervous systems in a state of wonkiness, right? Because there's no like just resting in a structure, because they keep changing it. And if you don't change it, then your shit doesn't work and everything slows down. And so it's like, this is that squeeze, that force. So why would I choose to enslave myself, to like tighten my bondage to that paradigm by enabling two-factor authentication on anything? I don't want to be required to have this thing anywhere near me, let alone have it, period. I find it so freaking offensive. I'm guessing that most people aren't feeling it as viscerally and somatically as I feel it. But it's this combination of like, and you know, Emily and I have talked about this many times on our Words podcast, wordspodcast.locals.com, if you want to check out that whole body of work. You know, there's that NASA document that was on the web from 1997 saying that this like information overwhelm technology rollout overwhelm was part of, you know, for all intents and purposes, this like World War III attack we're all navigating, which is a war of words, a war of propaganda, a war of ideology, a war of frequency, and a big gross divide and conquer. Suck job. A big gross divide and conquer suck job. I'm gonna stick with that. But it's like, it keeps us in a collective state of like a frenetic energy because, and it's like getting ahead, you know, trying to keep up with everything while at the same time juggling the demands of life, which become heavier and heavier as people need to do more and more to maintain these lifestyles that very few people can afford because we're living in a debt economy. And so many people are under the mistaken impression that capitalism is the problem and that capitalism is evil. And if we truly had free market capitalism, it would be a dream come true because we would all have equal opportunity to succeed. But we don't have that. We have debt enslavement. And the real issue that would be wise for us to turning our attention to course correcting when it comes to economics would be getting us out of a debt economy, getting folks out of the debt enslavement paradigm. But all this is to say, I'm not doing two-factor authentication. And in terms of the larger conversation around, like what I was linking in the post-show throwdown that I had mentioned was I was linking, why don't we connect the climate crisis narrative with planned obsolescence and get that that group, right? The people who are buying into that narrative and that ideology to start pressuring Apple and these other tech companies to do away with planned obsolescence. And again, why not have all of us unite for this, whether it's for, you know, pollution and saving landfills from all this garbage, or just honoring human life, honoring our consciousness, honoring our freedom, not trying to bilk us, respecting your customer by, you know, giving us a product that we can depend on and not needing to, you know, I don't know where along the way the like greed button got like slammed like way too hard, way too many times, where like it wasn't enough to just have happy customers who were buying new products every few years or decades when they broke, instead of like every few months or It's just gross. It's just like so over the top. Like when I think of it in my mind of our current, like the way that planned obsolescence and the greed driving that is decimating like our human family, I think of a primate like frenetically, compulsively masturbating. That's how gross and like indulgent and like compulsively pathologically indulgent that distortion feels to me. Pause for a sec. All right. So an Apple has this other weird, like, and this is just goes back to the weaponization of customer service, which I believe is completely, you know those words that like sometimes just are just, I'll consistently forget. Like there's some words I consistently don't spell right, like commitment. And then there's this word, it's like controlled, when there's like a conspiring, you know, it feels like all of the large corporations who decided to destroy their customer service departments or do away with them or just infect them with stupidity or hatred or just chaos for the sake of generating chaos. They all happen at the same time. They all happen around the same time, right? Like all of a sudden, we couldn't get any humans at all, ever, at Facebook, at YouTube, at Tumblr, right? Any of the online link bio. I'm thinking of all the places where I had my accounts deleted, deactivated for no reason whatsoever, but coincidentally, the same week that Plandemic 2 came out. But there's no, like, it's the best shield of like they just took the whole department away. So those who used to be the go-betweens between the greedy oligarchs and the public, now they either don't exist or they exist at such a like warped, demented capacity that's barely a capacity that only functions to like infuriate, generate louche for like, you know, the interdimensional lizards who are pulling the puppet strings of the oligarchs here in this dimension. And also just like making things not work, right? And I think that's one of the pieces. Like I think of my sweet friend Colin, who's like so genuine in his curiosity and like wanting to understand, you know, my perspective on the world situation, which I think differs a lot from, you know, people who are very close to him and his own understanding of the world situation. And a lot of the times he'll ask like, but why? But like, what's the purpose of this? Or, you know, it's not just him. I'll hear it from a lot of people, like, why? What's the purpose? And I think it's important for us to remember that chaos is one of their purposes, like just to make things not function. Like people will look at what's happening with the migrant crisis, right? We have our favorite evolutionary biologist, Brett Weinstein, going to the Darien Gap to do his live investigative reporting on the migrant crisis there, because as an evolutionary biologist, he's certainly the best person to be reporting on that for the rest of us. But chaos. You know, just making things not work. So the migrant crisis, like, sure, they could be bringing in some sort of militia. Sure, it could be some Chinese, you know, take them down from the inside thing. I think, I mean, it's a yes and, right? Yes, sure, it's all possible. And I think one of the primary things is just chaos, right? Like, remember during the pandemic when, like, they decided this would be a good time to have people be allowed to steal. That was it. It was people could steal as, you know, whatever they wanted from the store as long as it was less than $2,000. If they go over $2,000, then they'll cause the cops. Like, what is that about? Like, just mayhem, chaos. You know, the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter, that was perfect for, you know, the overlying agenda, for the overarching agenda, just create more chaos. So in terms of like the whys, like just making things harder for your customers so that they're less happy and more inconvenienced, I believe that is reason enough driving a lot of different iterations of these. I've observed this here in Santa Fe, especially during the pandemic. There's this little, it's like a mini mall, and it's where our natural foods co-op is, and it's also where the laundromat is, right? So there's like, there's a yoga studio as well. So like, I feel like they run a lot of ops, a lot of experiments through there, especially through the co-op. And I've seen when they'll make these decisions just to create chaos. I saw this in LA. Emily and I have talked about this as well at Erewhon. So Erewhon, if you've heard of it, it's turned into this like just like expensive, like bougie. It's pretty douchey. Like it's a place to be seen. It's like super trendy. It used to be just like our natural foods market in West Hollywood. It wasn't like this big bougie, douchey, you know, fashion like hotspot place. It used to just be our natural foods market. And then Truth created the tonic bar there. First it was Dragon Herbs, and then it became the tonic bar. And Truth is the one who really turned that place into the hotspot that it was, because there was a bar. There was like a central community hangout place for all the high vibe health nerds who were into like the coolest, most out there, weird multidimensional stuff. And we'd hang and have these great beverages. And that like took it to a new level. And then it was bought out by, you know, I don't even know who bought it, but it wasn't Joe's dad anymore. And so then they started like making it douchier, right? That thing that happens is, as someone who was born and raised in LA, like I've gotten very good at noticing the markers of the douchification of something that used to be down to earth and genuinely cool. And one of the things that they did was they changed the direction of the cash registers, which changed the complete flow of moving through the store. So it used to be super organic, where like you'd walk in, you'd pass the cash registers, the tonic bar was over here, and then all the aisles, right? It wasn't a huge store. I have a feeling they did it to maximize space, again, greed. But then they changed it and they like kind of rerouted it in this weird inorganic way where they had to like put up ropes, right? To make you feel like you're part of a herd of cattle, right? You have to be like herded and told because it's so inorganic and like the worst feng shui. And I watched that create so much confusion. I watched it like upset the whole flow of the store. And I really think that that was deliberate on some level, because of some agenda. I'm sure they're running a million psyops through Erewhon. That place feels so weird. At least it did the last time I was there. I haven't been to LA in a few psyops. Anyway, all I'm saying is chaos and confusion is very often reason enough to run an op on the populace. Okay, so how is it where you live? Here? No one bags groceries anymore. They don't bag groceries at the co-op anymore. They don't bag groceries at natural grocers anymore. I don't think they bag groceries at Whole Foods. I mean, you have to do that self-checkout. I don't go there. I don't know how it is at Sprouts, but I have noticed that cashiers no longer bag our groceries. And it was like, okay, so I guess this started during COVID because cooties? Like there were cooties going from, I'm gonna take this can that this cootie riddled infectious disease carrier just put on the belt, and I'm gonna swipe it, and I'm just gonna put it on the counter, because if I touch her bag and put it in her bag, then I'm gonna die. But if I don't, maybe it's the bag. It's because the bag is gross, but they could have their own bags. They recycle boxes there. They weren't doing that anymore. I don't know. Again, like it's just, I'm not smart enough to get into the mindset of how COVID physics works, but maybe I'll consult my favorite evolutionary biologist and he can explain it to me. So And if you want to know what that reference is, tune into my podcast with Emily Moyer, Words, podcast.locals.com. And we've been live streaming on Emily's channel, Emily Moyer, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. This concludes our commercial break. Okay, they don't bag groceries anymore. Again, the normalization. And it's not like I'm a princess and I can't bag my groceries. It's a couple things. One, I'm actually horrible at spatial relations. It's not even appropriate to say it's not my strong suit. I'm literally retarded when it comes to navigating space and spatial relations. And anyone who's been in my car with me or taken a trip with me knows this and is generally appalled, like, oh my God, I didn't realize you were this stupid. So when it comes to organizing the things in the bag, I'm not great at it. And beyond that, I'm trying to pay. Like generally, I just noticed this the other day. It's like there's a line of people behind me. Everyone has places to go, things to do. It would move more quickly if I could just focus on paying, you know, preferably with cash. And I'm not there yet, though I absolutely do Cash Fridays and I do my best to use cash as often as possible. And I'm still using the card a little bit. Regardless, it takes time to dole out however we're gonna pay, and it would expedite the process if instead of standing there like a bump on a pickle, the cashier would go ahead and help bagging the groceries, which used to be part of the job. And it's like these days, it's almost like if we would tip them, they would do that. Because I'm also, in my mind, I'm just seeing like the correlation between this ridiculous tipping culture, right? Like it's another part, like as customer service has gone way down and the people who are serving me my coffee, prepping my food, whatever it is, seem to get worse and worse and worse and offer fewer and fewer courtesies and support, I'm expected to tip in more and more places. I find that completely nutty. Like, especially as someone who waited tables for 12 years and knows what it's like to make less than minimum wage because you're being taxed on your tips and to really, really, really depend on those for my livelihood. You know what that does? That makes someone good at customer service. That's what it does. When you're working as a waiter or a waitress who is fully dependent on those tips to be able to pay the rent and pay the bills, you get really good at the job. You learn to like serve your customers to the best of your ability, to go out of your way to make sure that they have a good experience because they're paying you. So that part of the tipping exchange has gone out the window. I don't see anyone doing a better job or even a good job, but now I'm supposed to tip for the person who just like rang up my shoe repair and she'll like flip me the iPad and it gives me the option to tip. And I'm like, why would I tip? It's especially amazing when the person is rude or doesn't even offer a hello or like a perfunctory professional greeting on any level, and yet I'm expected to tip. And it happened the other day where I went to a food truck in Colorado and I paid with a card, but I was tipping with cash. But I do the card thing and he flips it back and he goes, hey, what's this? What's this? You didn't do the other things. And I'm like, what other things? And he's like, well, you didn't tip. And he says it to me as I'm putting cash in his jar. And it was like, I mean, I'm not going to get in a fight with the guy who's making my food. It was just one of those like, are you for real? Like you're demanding a tip? I'm paying you for doing the thing that I'm paying you to do. Like, tips used to be for above and beyond service. Now they're just expected. It's, and now I'm expected. So what I'm tying it into is like, oh, is that why cashiers no longer bag groceries? Because they're like, I'm not being paid enough. I don't know. And I'm like, is it coming from the higher ups? Don't do that anymore. Because I'm also noticing again, coordinated. That's the word, coordinated. Add it to the stickies on the wall. It seems coordinated, right? That none of at least the natural food stores that I go to are bagging groceries anymore. So another instance of where that's going away. So what I've started to do is like where I'm counting cash, I'll be like, oh, would you mind putting those in the bag for me just to speed this up? I always bring my own bag. And like, I'll say it so that I'll have, like, in the same way that they're using that kind of social pressuring to be like, do you want to round up for charity? And I'm like, no, charity isn't a thing. And I'm not going to be bullied into rounding up for God knows where my money is going. You're not even bothering to name what the alleged charity is. It's just for charity. And then because of social pressure, I see people do it all the time. Oh, sure, sure, because I'm a good person, because I'm virtue signaling. You don't even know what your money went to. Did it go to child trafficking? Did it go into some billionaire's yacht fund? Like, you don't even know. It's so performative. But I'll use that same tactic in terms of like, oh, would you mind doing that just to expedite for the people waiting for me in line? So now I have the people in line, they're like bearing witness to like, can we hurry this up by extending the same courtesies of this position that have always been there since the beginning of cashiers. Okay, what's next? The tip to buy aspirin at CVS. Like, you've been standing here the whole time. Actually, at the CVS I go to, they're not even. I will stand at the register for like 5-7 minutes waiting for the one cashier to make her way back to the register, because I'm not going to do the self-checkout. Like, no, I draw the line. I draw the line. And then, you know, if I pan a card, she'll flip it to tip. Are you kidding me? What am I tipping for? Your rudeness? And the quality of service has plummeted. And I feel like a lot of the reason is because now we have like the Gen Z are stepping into these service positions. But because this has been normalized at a slow boil, they don't even know what customer service is. They don't know what they don't know the roles they're not fulfilling because they didn't experience them and they're not being taught. But for the people who are like, you know, mid 30s and up, no excuse. You know better. We know better. So now it's time for us to, like, this is as normalized as it gets, and now we're going to push it back, and we're going to ask for customer service to come back. We're going to demand, if these people want to keep our business, you're going to offer customer service. So next. Oh, so this is another one that happened at the at one of the local health food stores, and this also ties in with the Gen Z issue. And I do think that this is something that we would be wise for us to do some brainstorming on, like, what are we going to do with Gen Z who was born into this enslavement construct and they have no perspective to understand that they are in an anti-life enslavement construct that hates their guts and wants them dead or enslaved. Because we can't be heavy-handed about it, right? That's not going to work. And is it just a generation gap? I don't think so. We're talking about techno-fascist enslavement. We're talking about a youth that is willingly chopping off their genitals before their brains have stopped developing, before they're old enough to drive a car. Like, I feel like we've gone to the cuckoo place where it's fair to say that this is more than just a generation gap. If you have a different perspective on this, I welcome it. Please enlighten me. Email me through my website, dannykatz.com. I'd love to hear it. But it's like, how much leeway do we give a toddler when playing with a razor blade? Not a lot. How much longer are we going to let the toddlers drive the truck when it's heading for a cliff? Like, at some point, I feel like we take the wheel and we're going to need to do some repair in terms of restoring humanity, restoring a sense of humanity in our exchanges. We have to safeguard that. And it has been attacked. Full-fledged attack, and it is time for us to name it, to call it out, to bring other people's attention to it so that we push it back. We stave off this normalization. So what do we do with Gen Z? I'm not sure. I'm still getting clear, and I definitely invite your perspective. But okay, so this was a moment where I went into Natural Grocers and I was dealing with a health imbalance, and I had a list of herbs and whatnots that I was advised to get. And I'm not, it's a big nutrition department. I don't work there. I don't know where anything is. So after like asking a cashier to call someone in the nutrition department because there wasn't anyone there, this kid shows up who's probably, I don't know, 19, 20. And I hand him the list and I'm like, okay, I need these things. And he showed me to a couple of them. He might even show me to like three of them. But then there were a bunch where he was like, I don't know where those are. And he just walked away. That was his answer. He's like, yeah, I don't know where those are. And he literally walked away and didn't think there was a problem with that. I needed help. He wasn't like, let me call my supervisor. Let me see if there's like, there's got to be some sort of master book or list where I could look it up. Like, no, he was not interested in problem solving. He was not, there was no work ethic that I could see him betraying in himself because there was no work ethic present. There was no idea that there's a person in front of me who is inviting my support, and that's part of my job. So, what can I do to adequately offer that support? Like, that whole part of the like assumed thinking process that goes into having a job was not there for this person. It was just not there. It was like, no, I don't know. And then he was off the hook. And that is what I noticed. And that's like one of the biggest ways that I see customer service being weaponized now is like, I used to call Apple, and it, like, of course you have to press the buttons to get to the right department, which is already something that annoys the hell out of me. I would like to be greeted with a person. I just spent, these things are not cheap. Granted, mine's not super new, but these cost a pretty penny. This laptop that I'm talking into right now costs a pretty penny. When I'm spending this much on products and I'm as loyal as I have been to Apple, when I call for support, I'd like a human voice to greet me. I really don't think that that's asking too much. How much money are they making every year? How much profit are they making that they can't afford to hire a friendly person to greet the clients, to let them know that they're valued as people? Because we're not. That's why. It's not just because of their cheapness. It's because they're social engineering us into an AI techno-fascist enslavement construct. And it's also because they hate our guts. That does it for part one. As you would like to pick up the second half of this deep dive into the weaponization of customer service, head on over to Patreon or Locals, where I host all of my second half conversations, plus my post-show throwdowns, plus oodles of bonus content. You can find this second half conversation and all the other awesome stuff I mentioned at dannycats.locals.com, as well as patreon.com/dannycats. As you are inspired to learn more about me and my work, my books, my courses, my webinars, how you can work with me one-on-one or bring me into your organization as a quantum languaging consultant, head on over to dannycats.com, where you will find links to all of my offerings. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. It's the best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch despite all sorts of thought policing and big tech shenaniganing. That does it for today. Thanks so much for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. Have a rockin' day.
And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired, as you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and/or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews, as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannykatz.com as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me a one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannykatz@pm.me or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.